You're listening to Woman in Politics London.
Hello, my name is Sue Hillis. I'm a board member of Women in Politics. Women in Politics has launched the 2020 Ask Her campaign as part of an effort to encourage women to consider running for office in an upcoming election at any level of government. This campaign's primary goal is to support all women who would like to become involved with politics by sharing the experiences, perspectives, and advice of other women who've already entered this arena. We'll hear from women who've previously served in office, from current elected officials, and women who've run in the past. All will offer their advice and experience to help inspire other women to enter the race. Above all, we want to achieve the goal of having more women's voices at decision-making tables. Today, we welcome Leslie Whiteye, former chief of the Chippewa of the Thames. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you. Thanks for doing this.
So tell me about the moment or minutes that led up to you deciding to run.
So the moment, I think, was after speaking to my cousin and my friend. But this is leading up from a number of conversations. But this particular one was really for me to just talk out loud once again about what it is I think I'm going to be doing. I needed to hear and get a sense of, you know, is this a smart thing for me to be doing right now, given what's happening in the community, given, you know, what's going on in my life. And during that conversation with my cousin, who was a member of the elected council as a person already elected, he was just kind of reinforcing that we need, you know, new ideas, new voices, new ways of doing things at the table, and that this would be a really good time for that to happen if you consider doing this. And so that's one of the reasons why I started asking around to see if I was ready, is just because I was so concerned about one, our financial future, and if we were being progressive enough, and two, if we had the tools and the mechanisms in the community and at the administration level to be really using our funding strategically, because we had just finished a land claim settlement in 2013, and we were in kind of the second year of implementation. And I was a little worried about how it was being viewed. And I think that, along with all those conversations, I just kind of said, you know what, I'm ready. Personally, my husband said, you know, he was concerned, but at the same time, he was supportive. And all of that led up to one moment a week before nomination day, I'm going to run.
So you talked about many conversations prior to that. So how long do you think it was before you made that firm commitment that you went down and filled out the nomination form? Oh,
there were a lot. I do recall one with a colleague. I used to work at the Ministry of Education in the election before I ran. And because she knew how much I cared about the issues, we would talk around the table all the time about, you know, not just First Nation issues, but, you know, Canadian and provincial issues. And she would go, Leslie, why aren't you running for office? And I said, I don't know. I did before. I was an elected council person. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. I haven't really put my mind to it. And she's like, I think you better run. And at that time, it was like, no, I've got things to finish here at the ministry that I really care about. But then those things got finished. And so 2 years later, I was ready. And it took that long to really think seriously about running for the position of chief, for sure.
So what was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome? Getting those things done, or were there other hurdles to get to overcome in order to actually get to the stage of running?
I think the biggest thing was to, one, finish the work I had started at the Ministry of Education and developing the textbooks and seeing the project through on curriculum that I was doing. I just feel really committed. I I wanted to see things through to the end that I said I would commit to. And so those are all kind of coming to a close. And the work, I was really proud of the work that the office was doing. And there was a calling to go home. I wasn't getting any younger. My children were older. They weren't, you know, babies or toddlers. They were, you know, in their grade six or grade three. And so all of that combined along with the support of my husband, I thought, okay, this is a good time in my life to take on this challenge.
So did you have expectations leading up to the campaign, and did the experience that you had line up with those expectations, or was it different?
It was so different. I just thrive off of positivity. I just completely get so excited around, new innovation, new ideas and charting and, you know, mapping things out. And I think I knew going in that it was going to be challenging in terms of trying to stay focused on issues and keeping the topic at the issue level. I knew that was going to be always a challenge. But I guess I really, you know, thought there were going to be things I could do fairly quickly. And that wasn't the case. In First Nation communities, it's a 2-year cycle. And I didn't realize how quickly that 2 years just flew right by. And so by the time I had built the networks and, you know, the ability to take a call or make a call and people would receive it, my term was up. And so this 2-year cycle is just unrealistic in terms of getting but anything going, substantially. So, and it's not that I needed to start from new, there was lots of exciting things going on at Chippewa, but boy, that 2 years went by so fast. It just wasn't enough time.
Well, and other governments have 4-year cycles and that seems short. So 2 years does seem like it would go by in the blink of an eye, especially if you've got something big that you want to accomplish for sure.
That's right.
So tell me about your experience being a woman in office. Did you feel that had an impact?
Yeah, right out of the gate, it was a challenge. I definitely felt, and I could see it around the other political tables that I was fortunate to sit at as a chief, that the women, while they weren't afraid to speak their minds, the level with which we had to reiterate our opinion or our perspective or build more facts behind it, I'll say, like, it just seemed like there was more that had to be done to be heard. I think I didn't find that at all something that stopped me from, using my voice. I found it actually quite a good pressure, because you always want to be speaking from the perspective of facts, and you want to be speaking from the perspective of evidence. And I think we as women had, we had to do that. Fortunately, I didn't see that pressure put on the men in the same way. Their opinion could just be stated that simply, and it was okay, let's do it. The other thing that I also found was really important for us as chiefs was time spent together informally around topics of particular important issues. And some of those political tables, they're very formal. And so I can't thank enough my colleague, Sherry Dockstader, who was chief at Oneida Nation of the Tens at the time, who became that sounding board for me, at the salad bar as you're getting your dinner, or, on the trip on the way up to the meeting, because that's where the real understanding about what's happening in the room could take place. If I didn't have those initial networks that way, I don't know that I would have survived or been as effective as I could have, could have been. So yeah, there's definitely a difference.
So were there barriers? Did you feel like there were barriers both in your campaign and being in office because you were a woman?
I think the campaign side of things, I wouldn't say necessarily that there was any barriers. We've got strong women who really run the community as it is at the administration level. Already they're the worker bees in the community. So there, I think the community, you know, already had high level of expectations around the women and what they could do, which is a great place to be. So campaign wise, I felt very, you know, tasked, like people asked really important questions, but I don't think I was treated any differently wanting to take on the role. It was, I would say, a little bit different depending on the tables I was sitting at once I got in as chief, though.
So when you were trying to make things happen at other levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, there was a point where I found so much benefit in reaching out to Chief Doc Stater that we decided to kind of get together and include other First Nation women chiefs and elected women counselors around a table. And so we started to begin hosting lunch breaks with women leadership at the political tables when we would meet both provincially and nationally. And that time spent, you know, we started small with 10 of us maybe coming, and by the second or third meeting we had, you know, 20 to 23 women, and we would just sit and talk with each other about our experiences. And that just gave us, it was like getting a energy boost that you're okay. This is kind of the way it goes, and here's some strategies to get through it. I just can't thank enough the women chiefs that were around the table to help me through all those things.
So you developed your own network and support system.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
What other supports did you receive that were most helpful or most important to you, both in your campaign or while you were in office? And how did you, you've reached out to Chief Doc Stater, you said, on your own, but how else did you get those supports around you?
I think for my campaign, what really was felt so good was getting a call from a community member who I had actually taught as a teacher in our community, who was working in policy work at the PTO level, and she was she reached out to me and said, you know, I see you're running, can I help you somehow? I've got these skills, and I just felt really reaffirmed, but also felt very thankful. And then she also brought in another leader in the City of London who is now a member of Parliament of Ontario. And those two come together during my campaign, shortly after I had put forward my name and accepted the nomination, and said, can we help you with your campaign? We'd love to do your communications. And then introduced me actually to Women in Politics at that time. And I didn't realize the organization even existed. I went running home and you know, started to research what is Women in Politics. And I just learned so much just in what was there. And from the two, we just met, and they gave me their best advice on how to develop my brochure, you know, what kind of points I should be making, what the things I care about, and how will I convey that, you know, those things out to the community members. That was an incredible amount of help. I felt almost kind of emboldened. I just felt like, oh, I can do this. It's gonna be okay.
That little spark of support just sparked a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. It matters a great deal. It really did to keep the engines going.
And them coming to you, as you say, just was, I'm sure, made such a difference.
Yeah, it really did. I am so thankful for that to this day. Like that really, really got my head in the game in a different way that I didn't realize I needed to be thinking about in terms of a campaign. I ended up producing a video. I created a website. I wasn't scared of the new technology. That's something new certently at Chippewa, not a lot of people were campaigning this way. It was usually a letter in the mailbox. in, but it has its pros and cons. Like, I don't think they're always a success, but boy, I wasn't afraid to go that way because of the two that came forward and said, hey, I'll sit down and work this out with you. And on top of that, my dad is elected counselor for just over 40 years. Like he'd been around the political table a long time, and his conversations of just support and thinking about the issues I cared about and how to frame them and get my word out, like, was just really, really, really important to me, feeling confident going in, for sure.
So you were kind of raised in the political arena then.
Oh, yeah.
You were very aware of how things worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure that was helpful as well.
It was so helpful.
So what advice or guidance would you offer a woman who's just starting to think about running for office?
So in our context in the First Nations communities, just be really, really true to what you care about. And, you know, I think also being realistic too about what you can and cannot get done in 2 years. I think just having a bit of a scope of, you know, that political cycle that falls within that 2 year period. But not only that, one of the big takeaways I had was the administrative cycle. So I thought we could go in and start, you know, trying some new things out, and, you know, only to be told, oh, well, it's not in this year's work plan, you know, and you kind of miss that original approval process of what you're dealing with for this first year you're in office. And the work plans are well underway. It's not like you can go in there and suggest a different way. So I think going in, understanding what point you're entering in those two cycles is really important. I think also you'll want to really understand how the internal decision-making processes work. And in understanding that, you'll know the informal political and ways to get things done quickly and more strategically. If you spend more time just thinking about, you know, who's in the room and what are those things that they can bring to the table that are really beneficial. And because it's really easy to get into the old, just an usual way of doing things. And that leaves a lot of people out at the table. And you're not in this alone. You shouldn't think that you're going to have to come with all the answers and the solutions. You don't. You just surround yourself with really knowledgeable people. And that's one of the things my dad told me. He goes, just make sure you're everybody else in the room is smarter than you. Because you're going to need as much expertise on these complex issues as you can. And the more you surround yourself with that diversity of information, so you have all the perspectives, the better you're going to be in steering a council towards making their best decision. And I guess that's the last thing I'd like to say too about that is, as chief, you're the chair of the table. I think people, when they talk to you, they go, well, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And in the end, the decisions get made by a majority vote. So the real kind of benefit a chief can bring to the table is creating the space and the time and the information that is needed to make good decisions. And wherever possible, you control that. And so, you know, make good use of that. You know, don't get swept away in somebody else's timeline if it's going to end up being in a very, you know, resulting in a bad decision. You're the chair. You set the agenda along with your staff. You've got a political piece to take care of, and there's administrative work to take care of. And that administrative work can completely take over your entire table, and none of the political work gets done. So the chief as chair is so, so important. And that would be the advice I would bring is, you know, how are you going to steer and what skills can you be working on to become a better facilitator of those discussions?
And having that clearer vision early on or before you even run, because as you say, with such a short time frame to implement anything or to make any difference, you really have to be ready to hit the ground running, more so than other elected officials who have a long time frame.
Yes, absolutely. You're so right, Sue. That's right. You have to know going in.
And I'm sure establishing some of those relationships you're going to need later as well, I'm sure is very helpful.
Yeah. There were some big portfolios that were well underway when I started. You know, one was a Supreme Court challenge on a pipeline and the way in which the community had been engaged. And another big one was the, we were in the middle of a tobacco legislative framework relationship with the provincial government. You know, these are things I knew going in that, you know, I'm not here to topple all the good work that had been happening. I'm here to help understand what is happening, where it's at, and what direction it's going and why it's going in that direction. And then getting the best information to make sure it's in the right direction that everybody still wants to go in. And so I didn't try to, you know, stop working on any file just because I didn't bring it to the table.
Very complicated, complex things that you had to be up to speed on right away. So congratulations for you to be able to do that, because I'm sure that's very challenging, because that's a lot of information to be able to wade through and understand and see all the perspectives of that you are then responsible for, as you say, facilitating the decision.
Yeah, there's no preparing you for that education. Well, you know, the first thing as an educator I'll tell you is, you know, the education system is not going to teach the First Nation history I needed to know to sit around those tables. And lucky for me that I had these incredible policy support people that were running those particular folders. So very, very knowledgeable. Not only the tobacco lead, the director for that project, very knowledgeable, very skilled, very educated, but also the lands claim, the lands environment and treaty office, you know, had a fully engaged team over there. So that certainly helped. I conducted my office in a way where they could come in freely in and out and use this space, and I didn't see it as my space. I conducted, you know, all those kind of team meetings in that space with a big whiteboard. And I'm a question person. Like, I just ask questions, and it puts people off who aren't prepared for that. But at the same time, I just can't help myself. Like, I just want to know. I just want to practice saying it out loud and ask a question over again and tell them the answer. And is this what you mean? And I'll repeat it and not be afraid of, as a leader, to convey that you have the right to be inquiry based, but also to remind folks that in your inquiry, you're not questioning their ability. You're just trying to be up to speed so you can do your job as their political spokesperson to move it forward in a better place to do that. That was my most important and most fulfilling part of being a chief during that time, was the time spent in those teams and moving these projects along. I feel really proud about that.
So do you think you'll enter the political arena again?
Once again, I'm in the middle of a huge, amazing project right now, and I really love the work. And I can see now I'm really driven by those things that kind of feed your spirit, right? Where you don't even know you're working and somebody's paying you for it. I'm lucky again. I'm in that space again, working with a bunch of First Nations around education governance and jurisdiction. And so if you asked me that today, I would say no. I just feel obligated to get and move this as far as I can. And I know there's more work to be done here, so not at this time.
But you're still leading and achieving success for your community ultimately, right? So
yes,
exactly. Same kind of work.
That's right. The same kind of work, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your perspective with us
today. Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity. It's really important that we encourage our young women to take that next step. There's got to be more women voices at the table. There has to be.
Don't forget to follow the rest of this campaign on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Thanks for listening.